Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bareback Facts. Today, we're going to take a look at the epic, the Volsunga saga, and we're going to discuss the rise of the hero Sigurd and the heroes that he influenced and the importance of Sigurd as far as literature goes and as far as the evolution of the concept of a hero. So we got a little bit to talk about here. As always, I'd like to welcome you all back. Hope everybody has enjoyed the show thus far to this point. I decided it was time to shift gears. You know, Kim Burrell, Eventide, came on. We had a great discussion. I want to thank everybody who listened into that show. Made it one of the most listened to shows that we've done so far. And I hope that a lot of you will keep coming back and enjoying the show. As always, I'd like to remind everybody that there is a call-in number at 718-508-9883. Today, I do not have a guest, but I do have guests on the way. February 16th, I'm hosting Liquid Assassin, the musician, musical artist, and a man trying to make his way in the music industry today. I'm also going to have Kim Burrell Eventide return to the show on March 14th as we go for round two. We're going to go for round two. Another great philosophical discussion is in the works, and I'm still working on other guests, but that is all for the future. And for the now, we're going to talk about Sigurd, Fafnir's Bane, and the Volsunga Saga. So without further ado, let's get right into it. So what is the Volsunga Saga? For starters, the Volsunga Saga is often referred to as the Saga of the Volsungs, and it is a legendary saga that is dated back to 13th century Icelandic prose rendition of the origin and decline of the Volsung clan. It includes the story of Sigurd and Brynhild, whom we're going to talk about today, and the destruction of the Burgundians. So it's going to be a very interesting story. Now, the saga has given rise to a lot of great stories. It covers themes including power struggles, good versus evil, and the influence of curses. And that's going to be interesting indeed. Now, the saga has given rise to operatic and literary adaptations such as Wagner's Der Ring des Nibelungen, commonly known as the Ring Cycle to many, Henrik Ibsen's The Vikings at Helgeland, William Morris's The Story of Sigurd, the Volsung, and the Fall of the Nibelungs, and J.R.R. Tolkien's The Legend of Sigurd and Gudrun. Important to note also that the Volsunga saga has been an incredibly influential piece in and of itself. It's influenced the writing of Das Nibelungenlied, which is loosely based off of it, and was a primary source of inspiration for J.R.R. Tolkien and his entire mythos for the Lord of the Rings. So this piece of literature is incredibly valuable and has been incredibly impactful. Now, two major themes of the saga are male responsibility, the responsibility of rewarding friends and punishing acts of shame, and the female responsibility of goading for revenge. Together, these create much of the contention in the saga. It's largely based on the epic poetry of the historic Elder Edda, which is another major piece of literature. The earliest known pictorial representation of this tradition is in the Ramsund carving in Sweden, which was created circa 1000 AD. Now, the origins of the material are considerably older, however, and info real events in Central Europe during the period of migration, during which many different tribes of peoples were trying to find their place in the world. And this is a time in which Europe is really shaped, created into the melting pot of states that we see today. Chiefly, the destruction of the kingdom of the Burgundians by the Huns in the 5th century, however, is one of the major events that occurs within the saga. Some of the poems contained in the Elder Edda relate episodes from the Volsung legend, and on the other hand, the only manuscript of the saga which is held by the Royal Library of Denmark, dates to about the year 1400. And in this manuscript, the saga leads straight into Ragnar's saga, Lodbrokkar. So those of you big fans of Ragnar Lodbrok from the show Vikings, all these shows are heavily influenced by these epics. Some of them straight rip this story off in many cases. They straight rip characters off. And another great saga that we'll talk about in the near future is Njal's saga, which is one that has really been ripped off by a lot of shows. We'll get into that as well. So let's get into the beginning of the story, and we'll talk specifically about Sigurd during the show. But first, we're going to get a little bit of grounding. As the story goes, you got to know where you come from. So the story starts with Siggy, and Siggy is this is one of the ancestors of Sigurd. The first part of the saga is about them. Now, it starts with Siggy, who is a great hunter, and yet a thrall of a man named Skadi, of a lord Skadi named Brady, who had matched his prowess in hunting, bested him in a hunt. Now, in a jealous rage, Siggy kills him, hiding his body in a snowdrift. Now, when Skadi finds out, and that's Skadi, not Skadi, like Scott, but finds out his thrall is dead in a snowdrift, he declares Siggy an outlaw. Now, Siggy becomes king of the Huns later on, and makes many enemies in his long reign. Among the enemies were his brother-in-laws, and in his old age, his enemies had him killed. Now, this is going to be important early on. So already you see that his family gets into a little bit of trouble. Now, his son, Rerir, succeeds him, and he was an even greater king than his father in bravery and in combat. He avenges his father, kills his uncles and other enemies, and builds a great empire through his numerous victories and wars against his neighbors. However, he and his wife have problems with producing an heir and desperately wanting a son. He prays to the gods. Now, Frigg, the wife and consort of Odin, asks for a golden apple from the giant Hrimnir. The apple was delivered to Rerir by Crow, which dropped the apple in his lap, and immediately realizing the importance of this divine sign, he shares the apple with his wife, and his wife becomes pregnant. Rerir fought a war to fight, falls ill, and then dies, and his wife is pregnant for 6 years. Dying, the queen asks her servants to cut the baby out of her womb, and Volsung was born, a man almost in size and in strength. So here we get the interesting beginnings. This is the ancestry of the Volsung clan, and right off the bat, it's very mystical, it's very magical, and it's pretty gory right off the bat. Now, Volsung is born an orphan. But unlike children, he is huge in size and strength because, of course, he is. He succeeds his father by becoming king of Hunland. This is, of course, a fictional place at this point. Volsung became even more powerful than his father. His palace is built with the oak tree called Bronstock in the middle of his great hall. And the giant Hrimnir sends his daughter Hiljod to marry Volsung because he's so impressed with him. He's like, yeah, go for it. As a consequence, Volsung becomes the father of 10 mighty sons and a daughter named Signy. Now, Signy was the twin sister of Sigmund and enjoyed a close relationship with her brother. And, you know, this is not Freud, but it's getting weird. One day, Sigir, king of Gothland, came and asked for Volsung to give his daughter's hand to him in marriage. Volsung agrees, though Signy doesn't want to marry him. And knows that Sigir is not to be trusted. She knows he's a murderous king. And, of course, her father's a moron and is not going to listen to her, and it's going to cause some problems. This is how these epics go, guys. And continue to truck with me because we're going to get to Sigurd very soon. But it's important we get through these early parts of the epic. Now, during the feast, to celebrate the new betrothal of his daughter, Odin, disguised as an old man, comes to the hall and drives a great sword into Brandstock. Odin tells them it would be his gift to the person who could draw the sword out of the great oak tree. Now, Odin, for those of you not familiar with Norse mythology, just about 99.999% of the time, basically, always shows up as an old man, old, decrepit-looking man with one eye, and nobody ever knows that he's Odin unless he tells them that he is, even though every single story with Odin in it, incidentally, he shows up as the same person every single time, but everybody just doesn't know it's him. They just think he's a remarkable guy when he shows up, but he's not Odin, because that would be crazy, even though he is. Just a funny little segue there. I just love that the Norse just, the people telling these stories, just had absolutely no problem with the fact that, you know, Odin's the same guy every single time. You know, at least Zeus and the other guys turned into stuff to confuse people. Odin just didn't even care. It was said that Volund, or Wayland the Smith, made the sword, and that the magic sword was later called Gram, Balmung, or Mimung in German myth. Interesting there, right? You sit and see in hints of Conan the Barbarian in there, right? Gram. Yes, all of these that we are so familiar with now are influenced by this saga. The sword had the power to make the owner win all his battles. Sounds like a pretty good sword. And no one in the hall except Sigmund, Volsung's younger son, could pull the sword from the tree. Sigurd, who could not draw the sword from Bramstock, wanted the sword for himself and offered to buy the sword off Sigmund. Sigmund scornfully rejects his offer of gold, and offended by the young man's reply, Sigurd was determined to destroy the entire family. So, as you see, Odin shows up, and for those of you that are less familiar with Odin in the Norse pantheon in general, despite the fact that, you know, Loki is often seen as a trickster god, an interesting thing to point out about Odin is that Odin is not only a god of knowledge and a god of, you know, battle frenzy and courage, he's also a god of madness. And he is a very chaotic god who thrives on chaos. And in this situation, he creates chaos. He puts a prize that knowing only one man can have the prize, and knowing who that man is going to be and knowing exactly what is going to happen, because if you know anything about Odin, you know that he knows everything. He knows what's going to happen before it happens. So he's able to prepare ahead of time for what the outcomes that he wants. And he basically, he knew that this was going to cause problems, so he does it on purpose. Now, Signy unsuccessfully tries to persuade her father not to marry her to Sigir. She had foreboding that Sigir will betray them, and Volsung refused to heed her warning. After Sigir married Signy, he invited Volsung to come to his home, because that's going to go over real well. Remember how mad he was about that sword. And Signy warned her father, fearing her new husband would attack him. But Volsung again ignores her warning. Now, the moment Volsung and his sons arrive in Sigir's territory, they're ambushed. And Volsung is... finds himself in some dire straits here. He's killed in the fighting, and all of his sons are... Sigir had Signy's entire collection of brothers, which is, you know, substantial amount, as we know, bound in trees with chains and helpless. A she-wolf, however, would come each night to kill and devour them. One by one, each brother was killed by the she-wolf until only Sigmund is left. Now, Signy secretly went to her brother and smeared honey all over his face and inside his mouth. So when the she-wolf came, instead of biting Sigmund, she licked his face and inside of his mouth. Because if there is one thing you need to get out of a tough situation, it is a French kiss from a wolf. Absolutely. So Sigir French kisses the wolf, and when it French kisses him, Sigmund bites its tongue until it dies. Because he's a straight, savage guy who just does not care. He bit a wolf to death like a stud. Now, somehow, Sigmund manages to get out of his chains and then he hides in a cave in the woods. Sigmi slips out of the house, finds her brother alive, and they begin plotting to kill Sigir and his men. And Sigmund recovers in the cave because apparently, you know, when you bite the face off a wolf and you tear it to pieces with your teeth, you need some recovery time. I would imagine there was some substantial trauma to recover from. Now, Sigmi has several children with the king, and when Sigmi's eldest son reaches the age of 11, she sends him to her brother. Sigmund was to train her son to destroy Sigir. However, Sigmund found that Sigir's son was too weak for such a task, and as soon as he finds out about he realizes this, he sends word to Sigmi, and Sigmi proves to be just about as vicious as her brother. She says, well, if he's not strong enough to kill his father, then just kill him. So the following year, Sigmi sends her second son to her brother, but once again, Sigmund says, yeah, he's too weak, so Sigmund murders him too. Realizing that none of her children by her current husband would ever be strong enough to avenge her father and brother's death against her husband, Sigmi sought help from a beautiful witch. The witch helped Sigmi by transforming her to look exactly like her. Now, in the form of the witch, Sigmi visits her brother Sigmund, making love to him for 3 nights. Returning to her husband, she was changed back to her own form and later discovers that she's pregnant by her brother. So we got into some Jerry Springer stuff here. Not to be surprised, she gives birth to Sinfjolti, and when he reaches the age of 11, she sends her son to Sigmund. Sigmund thinks that Sinfjolti was Sigir's son, and Sinfjolti doesn't know his real father at all. He just thinks that he's Sigir's son, so why would he not? Only Sigmi knows of the true relationship between Sigmund and Sinfjolti. Now, as he had already grown to basically the size of a man and size and strength, Sigmund discovers that Sinfjolti is suitable to help him kill the Volsung's murderers. Now, when Sigmund tells Sinfjolti about his family and Sigir's betrayal, he agrees to help. Sigmund trains him until it is time for vengeance. The two of them try to use stealth to reach the palace, but Sigir's 2 remaining children discover them and tell their father about the armed strangers in the palace. Sigmi orders her brother to kill her last 2 children to Sigir, but he refuses to kill any more of his sister's children. Sinfjolti has no such compunctions about the matter. He straight up murders both of them right then and there. He just kills them both. Now, Sigir's men capture Sigmund and Sinfjolti and have them entombed alive. But Sigmi manages to secretly give Sigmund's magic sword to him. And we remember that this thing makes it to where you can't ever lose battles. They use the sword and dig their way out of the barrow. Together they set fire to Sigir's palace while he and his men are asleep. Sigmi comes to them, revealing that Sinfjolti was Sigmund's own son, and because she had ordered the death of her own children, she returns to the burning palace to die with her hated husband. So, a little bit of a sad tidings here. Now we reach the death of Sigmund and Sinfjolti. Sigmund returns home with his son, where Sigmund has to drive out the current king, who had set himself up as ruler since Volsung was dead and there was nobody around to do anything about it. Once again, the Volsungs reestablish a mighty kingdom. Sigmund marries Borghild and becomes father of Helgi and Hamund. And at the age of 15, Helgi fights many wars and wins his own kingdom, earns the name Helgi Hundinsbani when he fights 2 battles and kills Hunding and his sons. Then Helgi goes on to defeat Hordbrod and Granmar to win his marriage to Sigrun, daughter of the king Hogni. And then finally Sigrun is, by the way, in addition to being extremely hot, is a Valkyrie. So she's got some divine blood in her. Yeah. So she's a shield maiden. She's definitely right up Helgi's alley. Now, of course, Helgi is out there having a great deal of success, and Borghild becomes incredibly jealous of her stepson Sinfjolti's prowess, and she plots his death. Because Sinfjolti is still pretty awesome. He's still out there doing doing work, killing people. So Sigmund was immune to all poison and drank two of the mugs of wine that Borghild had offered Sinfjolti. But Sinfjolti, however, drinks the third mug and dies from the poison. Now, Borghild, as a consequence, is banished from the kingdom. Sigmund buries his son in the wood. He meets a ferryman. The ferryman offers to help him cross, but the boat is only large enough to take one passenger, so Sigmund allows him to take his son's body to the other side of the fjord first. As the boat reaches the middle of the fjord, the boat along with Sinfjolti's body disappears, and apparently the ferryman is none other than Odin himself, who was again disguised as an old man with one eye, and, you know, nobody, you know, Sigmund has no idea who it is, because they never do. But Odin, it seems, had decided to personally send Fjolkli to Valhalla, so good on him. He made it to the place where warriors go. And after a while, Sigmund gets over it, seeks another wife. He falls in love with Hjordis, the beautiful daughter of King Eylimi, and woos her, but he had to compete against other powerful and younger kings, including Lingvi, the son of King Hunding. Sigmund wins her, despite being much older than the other suitors, and marries her. As a consequence, war breaks out between him and the Hundings, because Lingvi refuses to let her go. He's like, why should I? Despite the fact that that Sigmund and his newfound bride are winning, and his allies are winning the battle, according to the Norns, Sigmund was fated to die that day. Yet Sigmund could never be defeated, nor could he be wounded, while he wielded his magic sword, Gram, or Balmung, whichever name you prefer. So in order to fulfill his doom, Odin came into the battlefield with his invincible spear, Gungnir. And when Sigmund saw Odin, he attacked him, but when he struck the Gungnir, Sigmund shattered the sword in two. And the tide of the battle turned against his army, and he is defeated. Sigmund and his father-in-law, King Eylimi, fall in battle, and at night, Hjordis, who was still pregnant with Sigmund's child, found her husband mortally wounded in the battlefield. Sigmund advised his wife to gather the shards of his shattered sword so that their son could forge a new one, and Sigmund foretold that his unborn son would avenge him and Hjordis's father. Lingni, who still wanted to marry Hjordis but could not find her or her treasure, for she had fled to King Alf, whom she married. Hjordis would later give birth to a son whom she would name Sigurd. Alf, the son of King Hjalprek of Denmark, brought up Sigmund's son as if he were his very own, despite the fact that he wasn't. And so begins the tale of Sigurd. So Sigurd comes from a long line of warriors, and this is one of the things one of the reasons why we went through the precursor, if you will, to Sigurd's arrival on the scene in the saga. It's important to do this, because within a Norse saga, when we talk about specific heroes, we need to know where they came from. So Sigurd is descended from this very storied family of great warriors who either fell in battle or were betrayed by others, but nonetheless, these men were great warriors. His family is full of great warriors, both women and men. And so that means that Sigurd is going to follow in their footsteps. It's destiny. It's written on the wall. It's fate. And as we proceed, we're going to see that Sigurd is going to do something that no one else in his family probably could have. And it's what's going to make him stand out. It's how he gets his name, Sigurd Fafnisbane. Now, Sigurd, like his father and grandfather, grew at a rapid pace in both size and strength. His father, Alf, gave permission to Sigurd to select any horse that he wished from his stable, and he meets an old man with one eye. Bingo, it's Odin, of course, and Odin advised Sigurd to choose the young gray, telling the young hero that this horse was bred by Odin's horse, because of course it was. Sigurd chose the gray horse as his own and names it Grani, or Greyfell. So Odin already has his sticky fingers all over Sigurd's life. And this is where we get into the story of the Otter Guilt. For those of you not familiar with the Otter Guilt, it's the Otter's Ransom. Sigurd had a tutor named Regan, who was his foster father, and Regan was the son of Hreidmar, and brother of Otter and Fafnir. Otter and Fafnir are two very incredible characters. Regan is hoping to use Sigurd to obtain the famous treasure from his brother, so Regan tells the story of his youth and family history, and this is very significant. This is a very significant story because this story is one of the things that has influenced so many writers. It's the story of the Otter's Ransom. And so before we get into the story of the Otter's Ransom and its significance within not only Norse mythology, but literature, contemporary literature in general, we're going to take a commercial break. And it is my duty and my privilege and my honor to remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for a nice long chuckle. When we come back, we're going to talk about the story of the Otter's Ransom and why it's significant in this particular tale. And then we're going to get into the glory seeking of Sigurd. And we'll talk a little bit about the importance of him to the overall Volsunga saga.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eye, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stories page on Facebook.
Welcome back to the Bareback Facts, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the little commercial break. Now, before we broke off into the commercial, we talked about the importance of the Otter's Ransom. We introduced Sigurd, and we talked about Reagan and Otter and Fafnir. So, Otter, we get a little bit of a story here. We get this minor story, and this story is what influenced Stasneva Lungen Lee, what influenced Richard Wagner's work. It's what influences all these people to do what they're doing. So, we get into the Otter's Ransom. Now, Reagan recounts his family history. He says that Otter was able to shapeshift into an otter, obviously, his name suggesting that. And Loki, one of the best known as the trickster god, probably better known for the Thor movies now, is traveling with Odin and Honir, who sees Otter by the river and says, "Wow, that's a big otter. Let's kill it," and murders him and skins him. And Loki puts the pelt over his shoulder. When Loki and Odin and Honir come to Hreidmar's estate and impose upon the owner for hospitality, Hreidmar discovers that Loki killed his son. Hreidmar is a giant. And the reason that Otter was such a big otter is because he was a shape-shifting giant. Now, Hreidmar captures the three strangers and chains the three gods up. And he says only he will only release them on the condition that one of them pay a ransom. And Loki agrees to perform the task and is released. Loki knew that the only ransom that would be able to release Odin and Honir was the treasure of Andvari. And Andvari was a dwarf who not only owned a treasure hoard, but also a magic gold ring called Andvaranaut. Andvaranaut could help him find or make more gold. Now, Andvaranaut is particularly important because you may have heard of a certain ring known as the One Ring to rule them all. Andvaranaut is the precursor to the Ring Saga that is the Lord of the Rings, and it is a ring that people kill each other for, and they're going to kill each other for it very shortly because it's going to get cursed, which is what I'm about to explain. Now, Andvaranaut could help Andvari make gold as much as he wanted to. Now, Loki manages to steal the treasure, but Andvari escapes with the ring by changing himself into a salmon. So there's a lot of shape-shifting going on here. Loki manages to capture the dwarf, though, and he forces him to give up the ring. As Loki leaves the dwarf, Andvari hurls a curse upon Andvaranaut, causing tragedy to fall on any mortal who wore the ring. So any mortal now who wears the ring will be cursed and they will die. They will be destined for death, a premature one. So now we get the curse of the ring, the cursed ring that brings death. Loki returns with the ransom, now known as the Otter Guilt, meaning Otter's Ransom, which is later called the Rheingold. Funny how all these things just keep on streaming together. And the other gods are released. Hreidmar forgot about his grief over the son at the sight of the treasure because there's just so much gold, he just forgot all about his son. And Hreidmar's two sons wanting to share in the treasure. But in his greed, Hreidmar refuses to share Nir and Reginn. Fafnir, wanting the treasure for himself, murders his own father and drives Reginn away. The greed of Fafnir transformed him into a mighty dragon, and Fafnir lives with the treasure on what is called Nigna Heath, or the Glittering Heath. It's just a massive pile of treasure that Fafnir's taken a nap in. And if this isn't basically the story almost entirely of The Hobbit and the story of Smaug, the dragon, then you weren't paying attention close enough. But yeah, Fafnir is basically Smaug's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa. He came first. Because you don't have to ask which came first, the chicken or the egg, because Fafnir comes first. So now we get into Sigurd and his role in the saga. It's where things reach the fever pitch. After Reagan's story, Sigurd says, "Oh my gosh, what a terrible story! Your brother was killed. Your dad got greedy. Your other brother killed him, and now you have to live as an outcast. That's terrible. I'll help you kill this dragon." But then he says, "Wait a minute, I don't have a sword. I'm going to need one of those to kill it." So Reagan, being a great smith, as it happens, makes Sigurd a sword, and each time the sword breaks on the anvil. So finally, Hjordis gives her son the shard of Sigmund's broken sword. Now, Reagan forges a new sword with this shard, and Sigurd calls the sword Grom. With Grom, Sigurd cleaves the anvil in two. Now, before Sigurd sought out Fafnir, he gathers an army to avenge his death, the death of his father Sigmund and grandfather Eylimi. Sigurd killed all the sons of Hunding, including Ligny and Hjuard, and Sigurd and Reagan then go to the Glittering Heath. Now, Sigurd digs a pit to hide in and wait for Fafnir because he's not stupid. He doesn't want to fight Fafnir face to face. It's a dragon. What do I do? Why would I do that? That's crazy. So Sigurd waits for him, and he waits for him. And finally, Fafnir gets thirsty and decides to go drink from a stream. And when he does, Sigurd jumps out and stabs him right in the face and kills him. Reagan wants the treasure for himself and told Sigurd that he's not going to seek revenge for the killing of his brother if Sigurd cuts out the heart of Fafnir and roasts it for him to eat. The dragon's heart would give any man who devours the heart with the power with power over other men. And Sigurd agrees. As Sigurd cooks the heart of an open fire, he decides to test it to see if it's cooked. He burns his fingers from the heart juice that pours out of it, heart blood. And instinctively, Sigurd says, "You know, ow, that hurt," puts the fingers in his mouth, and immediately his senses become even more heightened than they ever were before. He can hear the language of the birds. He can hear the squirrels and the bugs. He can hear them talking. He can understand nature. He can hear everything that they say. And he happens upon the conversation of two little birds that happen to have been flying around near Reagan. And the birds tell Sigurd that Reagan will betray him as soon as he eats the heart, and he'll take the entirety of the treasure for himself. The birds also told him about the Valkyrie named Brynhild, who slept with a ring of fire at Hindfeld around her. Sigurd is noticeably shocked that he can now understand birds, but is also now incredibly pissed off that Reagan is going to try and betray him and kill him. So naturally, he gets pretty upset about this. He feels some type of way about it, and he goes back to Reagan's house, knocks on the door, and cuts his head off. Then he eats Fafnir's heart, because if there was one thing if there's one thing you do after you kill a dragon, you eat its freaking heart. That's what you do. Now, among the treasure, he finds the magic ring Angvaranaut, the sword Roti, the Angushimr, the helm of Ah, and the golden Beamir, which is a cuirass. Sigurd then leaves the Glittering Heath and journeys north to Hindfeld. So, of course, now he gets a magic ring, and he gets all this good stuff. It's going to be a good day. It's a good day to be Sigurd. Sigurd, of course, goes on to go find Brynhild. He tracks her down and finds out that she was punished by Odin for disobedience and that she was to wed a mortal. As her punishment, she's surrounded by a circle of flame at the top of a mountain, and only a mortal warrior brave enough to ride through the flame could claim her. Sigurd, of course, just slayed a dragon and ate its heart and then killed its brother. So he's feeling like he's on one right now, and that's exactly what he does. He rides through the fire, and he says, "Listen, baby, I'm here. I'm ready to party. Let's do this." Brynhild is just so damned happy that somebody rode through those flames that she just is all about that life right now. She jumps right in bed with Sigurd. They make love all up in there, and Brynhild has a daughter named Aslung. Sigurd tells Brynhild that he has duties to perform, but he'll come back for her, and she agrees. She tells the hero that she would sleep in the Ring of Fire and wait for his return. As a gift, Sigurd gives her the magic ring Andvaranaut as a token of his love, but the token is cursed, and he doesn't know that. Sigurd journeys north and reaches the kingdom south of the Rhine, talks to the king, Gjuki, who had married Grimhild, a wise woman or witch, who had three sons named Gunnar, Hogni, and Guttorm. They also had a beautiful daughter named Gudrun. And Gudrun had, of course, had a dream about Sigurd, symbolized as a falcon and later a hart or a stag, a hero who would who she would marry and love, but who would be killed by her own family, and Brynhild. Gudrun also dreams of her second husband, whom she loathed, Atli, if you're not gaining what the abbreviation of his name is, it's Attila. It's Attila the Hun. Yeah, but we're calling it, it's the Icelandic version. He's Atli now, which, you know, honestly, both names sound pretty awesome, but that's a segue. Atli is symbolized as a wolf, which will, in the end, kill her brothers. Now, Sigurd arrives at the home of the Gjukungs. Gudrun had fallen in love with him immediately, but Sigurd's still in love with Brynhild, Gudrun's mother, who, Grimhild, is a witch, has a magic potion, and it makes Sigurd forget all about Brynhild. We call this magic potion alcohol, but, you know, or ecstasy, or any other, you know, mind-altering substance we can think of. But nonetheless, Sigurd gets drunk, forgets all about Brynhild and his daughter, and because he has no memory of her, he falls in love with Gudrun because she's a 10. She is just fine. He marries her. They had a son named Sigmund, named after Sigurd's father, and a couple years later, they would have a daughter named Svanhild. As a brother-in-law, Sigurd swore an oath to Gunnar and helped the Burgundian king in many wars. Shortly after Sigurd and Gudrun's first child, Grimhild told Gunnar that he must marry a woman who is worthy to be his wife. Gunnar wants Brynhild for his wife, but Gunnar goes to Hindfeld with Sigurd to woo her. But Gunnar's not a good hero. He's not a big hero, and he's not man enough to ride through these flames, so he had Sigurd do it for him. He tries to ride Sigurd's horse, but it's not feeling him. So he asked him to help him out with the magic potion of Grimhild. Sigurd and Gunnar exchange appearances with one another. Gunnar returns home. Sigurd, disguised as Gunnar, again rode through the flame, awakens Brynhild, and is disappointed to find out that it's not Sigurd who woke her up. Now, she agrees to marry Gunnar because why not? She's been here for a while. Brynhild leaves her daughter to Sigurd, named Aslong, with Skimir and a chieftain and husband of her other sister, Bekhild. Now, this is where it's going to get a little dicey. Now, for 3 days, they ride towards Gunnar's home, and each night, as the disguised Sigurd sleeps with Brynhild, Sigurd places a sword between them. Sigurd exchanges the ring from Gunnar with the magic ring Ondvaranot, which the hero had given to Brynhild in their first meeting. When they reach the palace, Sigurd resumes his own appearance, and Gunnar is happily married to Brynhild, and it all sounds like it's going to go great. It's only after the wedding, however, of Gunnar and Brynhild that the drug wears off, and Sigurd is able to recall that he had promised to marry Brynhild at the mountain. And then he realizes that he'd broken his vows to her, but he couldn't do anything about it. It's a little late now. He's married to another woman, and now she's married. So returning to his own wife, Sigurd tells Gudrun everything that happens. He then gives the magic ring to Gudrun, and the ring would take a tragic consequence several years later. One day, Sigurd and Gudrun come to visit, and Gudrun and Brynhild have a quarrel of whose husband is better. Brynhild tells Gudrun that Sigurd was nothing but a vassal. Gudrun foolishly revealed that it was Sigurd who rolled through the flame twice, not her husband, and that Sigurd changed his form to resemble Brynhild's husband. Brynhild did not believe her until Gudrun showed her the Ondvaranot, which Brynhild had once received from Sigurd himself. As you can see, guys, the plot has thickened. Now Sigurd's in a little bit of a pickle because he wasn't supposed to do any of that. Brynhild, who had never stopped loving Sigurd, is enraged to learn that her husband and Sigurd had tricked her. No one could comfort her, and because nobody there knew her, when Sigurd visits her, he reveals that he had been deceived by the magic of Grimhild, causing him to forget her and married Gudrun. Yet it was not too late for him to correct matters after Brynhild married Gunnar. But Brynhild kept insisting that she wanted to kill Sigurd for his betrayal. She's still pretty upset about this. Naturally, when you disguise yourself as another person, guys, it's important to remind your partner that when you want to role play, you both got to be in on it. That's the thing about role play, guys. It can get you in trouble. So even when Sigurd offered her his treasure, she still was not down to reconcile with him. When she offered to leave, when he offered to leave Gudrun and make her as his wife, Brynhild rejects him. She seeks vengeance upon Sigurd and the Geukins or Niflungs, and that night Brynhild falsely accused Sigurd of taking advantage of her when the two had traveled to the Geukings' home from the mountain. Therefore, Sigurd had dishonored his oath of brotherhood to Gunnar. She tells Gunnar to kill his brother-in-law or else she will leave him. Now, Gunnar had always envied the hero's prowess and decides to plot for Sigurd's death. Since he's not man enough to do the job himself, he's got to think up a way to get him killed. So since Gunnar and Hogni were bound by oath to Sigurd, the king could not kill his own brother-in-law. He calls upon his younger brother to slay Sigurd. After two unsuccessful attempts to kill him, Guttorm decides to wait for Sigurd to sleep. With his sword, he mortally wounds Sigurd, and Sigurd woke and speared his sword into Guttorm's back as the killer tried to flee. Gudrun wakes to find her husband dying. He tries to comfort her, who is now pregnant with their son, and then he dies. What a shame. When Gudrun weeps for her husband, Brynhild laughs and mocks at her sister-in-law's wretched state. And it is here that the story shifts to the downfall of the Geukungs. Brynhild foretold the tragedy of them. Gunnar and Hogni would be captured and killed by her brother Atli. Brynhild also reveals Atli's own death by Gudrun, as well as the death of Gudrun's daughter and sons. At the funeral pyre, Brynhild ordered Sigmund's death, the son of Sigurd and Gudrun. This Sigmund should not, you know, obviously, guys, remember that this is not his father. This is his son whom he named before his death, after his father. And Brynhild then killed herself, asking her husband that she would be laid in the pyre beside Sigurd, whom she'd never ceased to love, which she had a funny way of showing how she loved him. Despite that, Gudrun does eventually plot the downfall of the rest of the Niflungs, and basically they die. They all die in a flaming house, and Gudrun dies in the house after she... She tries to kill herself, say, by drowning herself later on, but she basically burns down the house with the rest of her family in there, including her husband, and leaves with the son of Hogni. So, therein ends the story of Sigurd, and where most people would say the Nibelungen Lied would pick up the story and kind of run with it as well. But as you can see, this story shows a lot of similarities to stories you're probably familiar with. It's basically the plot to the show Vikings and all these other shows that you're enjoying today involving Viking culture. These stories are heavily influenced by the Volsunga saga, all these moves within moves, the feints within feints. Even Game of Thrones can trace some influence of the Volsunga saga, the Game of Thrones. We're all sort of betraying each other, under the table discussions. We got to protect our oaths. And in so much as we go for historical purposes, when we talk about oaths of loyalty to people, at least in the context of nobility, these oaths were incredibly serious. So, you know, when you see these shows where they talk about, you know, you have to honor this oath, you have to honor this, your word was really all you had as a noble. Yes, you probably had land and wealth and some title. Maybe you even had access to men at arms, but your word and reputation were key in maintaining your wealth, maintaining your men at arms, maintaining all these things that you treasured and valued. They were very important, and that's why they're such a great plot tool in these stories, because these oaths are very important. You have to maintain them. But you see, in the story, we've got some great things that tell us a lot about Sigurd's character and what makes him such a great hero. So the number one thing that I've argued with a lot of people over in terms of what makes a hero is that a hero must have a weakness or a hero must die. One of the two. A hero's got to have a weakness of some kind, and he's got to die. Heroes must have some mortality to them. There's got to be something at risk, or you're not really a hero. If you're just running around, you're invincible, and you're doing great things, that's all fine and dandy, but, I mean, there's no real risk to you. It doesn't mean you're not doing good deeds. It just means, you know, the sacrifice means a lot less if you know that you're going to come out unscathed. It's not a sacrifice then, is it? If you come out of it and you're totally okay, it's not really a sacrifice. You're kind of obligated to do it at that point, right? I mean, because you're invincible. So, but Sigurd is definitely mortal. We see that he is mortal. Dies really on account of two. Well, you might say he dies as a consequence of this magical curse, which is afflicted upon him and those around him who touch the Andvaranaut. But you could also say that Sigurd is killed due to greed over the Andvaranaut, and greed over the treasure, and greed over reputation, and greed, of course, leading to ambition, which leads to treachery, which leads to his death. So Sigurd he does have a very distinct weakness, and that weakness is that he's not really that freaking smart. He's just not very smart. He is sleeping around people who want him dead, and he's still just kind of like, I'm Sigurd. People won't kill me. I'm Sigurd. Look how great I am. Despite the fact that Sigurd does have, you know, basically superpowers. He does have superpowers. He can understand animals speaking. He's got heightened senses. He's got increased strength and agility. He's got increased vitality. So he's a very strong guy. He's got a magical sword. He's got magical armor, which incidentally doesn't save him in the end because he's not wearing it. So Sigurd is only a hero in so much as that he has only a Superman, only in so much as he has the tools that allow him to be so. Without his sword, without his armor, he's a formidable warrior. But you strip that away, and without the sword, without the armor, without the blood of a dragon inside of him, Sigurd is a man. A man. And even with the magical armor, he's still just a man. Remember that his father had a magical sword, and it still didn't save him in the presence of a god. And I would say that Sigurd probably wouldn't have been saved in the presence of an Odin either. But the thing that is Sigurd's primary weakness is that he's a fool. He believes... he is too naive. He's very, very naive. He believes that he trusts people too easily, and he believes that there is more good in people than there really is. He believes wholeheartedly that people will forgive him for his stupidity. And Brynhild is not ready to suffer him as foolish as she is. And no matter how much she loved him, she was not willing to suffer what she saw is a slight against her honor and the ultimate disrespect, the deception that was placed at her feet. Whether he was deceived into deceiving her or not, she saw that as the ultimate disrespect. And Sigurd is unable to see this. Now, as for the heroic deeds that Sigurd performs, he does perform some great heroic deeds. Number one, he forges a mighty weapon. With the help of Regan, he forges a mighty sword. So number two, he defeats an entire army and an entire family who betrayed and killed his father, wrecked his family. So that's pretty impressive. He does it basically with one other guy and this sword. Very impressive. And, of course, the key heroic thing that he did, of course, is killing Fafnir, the dragon. He kills a giant dragon, and he takes its treasure. And important to note, he kills the giant dragon with just his sword. He doesn't have the magical armor. He doesn't have the Andvaranaut. He doesn't have all the magical, you know, equipment that he gets later. He just has himself and his sword and dumb blind luck, or just, you know, prowess, his own skill and prowess. So he has to make it on his own steam early on. And lastly, he's a great hero. He's a great warrior. He is the key to the success of the kingdom, and when he dies, the kingdom falls apart. Now, we can say that Sigurd perhaps dies and the kingdom falls apart because of the actions of Gudrun and the actions of Brynhild and their personal rivalry with one another and their personal vendetta against one another over Sigurd. But even so, at the end of the day, Sigurd, once he's gone, the warriors, they're kind of leaderless. They don't really, nobody really respects Gunnar. Guttorm is dead because Sigurd killed him when he died. And Hogany is kind of a non-factor. He really doesn't do much. He's not that great of a warrior. Gunnar and him are not great warriors. And so because of this, we could say alternatively that even without the rivalry of Gudrun and Brynhild, Sigurd's death pretty much is the death knell for this kingdom. No pun intended. His death brings about the end of the Burgundians. And lastly, one of the major themes in this, and one of the things that really set Sigurd over the top as an epic hero, is that as soon as he touches the Andvaranaut. So as soon as he touches the Andvaranaut, his destiny is clear. He is going to die. He is immediately cursed. And anybody that has contact with the Andvaranaut, and basically who has contact with him, ends up dead. Even Brynhild ends up dead. Gudrun eventually ends up dead. So basically everybody that had contact with Sigurd after he kills Fafnir ends up dead, including Regan, who sent Sigurd to kill Fafnir in the first place and even helped him forge the sword that he used to do it, which kind of not very smart on Regan's part. Probably could have not talked so much around the birds, but it is what it is. You know, that'll teach us to spill secrets around birds, because birds will get you killed. But ultimately, we look at Sigurd as a character. He is very much the epic hero. He is a hero because there is something on the line for him. Because he's not invincible when he encounters Fafnir. He's not even invincible after he kills the dragon. He's gotten stronger, but he's not invincible. There's a real risk for Sigurd. Early on, for Sigurd, it's just his life and really his legacy. And his responsibility to his family. Those are the things that are at risk for Sigurd early on. The chance to avenge his father is what's at risk. After he does that, and after he kills Fafnir and Regan, then the thing that's at risk for Sigurd is reputation. And, of course, his life. He's still able to be killed. He is aware of this. People don't think that he can be killed because he's a great warrior at this point, but Sigurd knows that, that destiny comes for everybody. He knows that I'm not going to live forever. He knows this. He doesn't know when he's going to die, but he knows that his fate is already written. He believes this. And the characters in the tale believe this about themselves. They believe their fate is written. Now, that's a discussion for another time, is whether or not their fate is actually written or not. Whether or not we can determine whether fate is a great thing is really a workable way of looking at the universe and ordering it is a discussion for another time. But it is a major theme within this myth and within this within Norse mythology and within this saga specifically. You know, the Andvaranaut changes the fate of everybody who touches it. It curses them. Any mortal who touches it dies. It gets you one way or the other. And really, it's not unlike the ring from the Lord of the Rings. It's what the Lord of the Rings ring is based off of, the Andvaranaut, the ring that is cursed, the cursed ring. And really, we aren't sure in the early goings of Sigurd's life if he's cursed yet, if he's, you know, destined to die like his father died. We're up until even after he kills Fafnir, we're kind of like, wow, you know, Sigurd's really got it together. You read the story at that point in the story, you're kind of like, wow, you know, Sigurd is a beast. Nobody can stop this guy. Then he avenges his father's death, and then he becomes a great warrior in this other kingdom, and he hooks up with a Valkyrie, and we're thinking, wow, this guy's really got it together. But it's the meddling of other people, ambition, and Sigurd's naivety are his major weaknesses. And it's not his ambition, it's the ambition of other people. The ambition and machinations of others and his naive trust for those people. His inability, even with all his increased perception, his inability to judge a person's character correctly is what his greatest weakness is. And really, that's a great thing for us all to learn, is being able to judge a person's character better. And, you know, we ourselves, who we surround ourselves with reflects upon us, the kind of person that we are. And the story of Sigurd and the Volsunga saga is a great lens for viewing that concept. So Sigurd's choice of friends ends up getting him killed. And ultimately, that's his greatest weakness, his naive trust for others and his inability to see when people have not got his best interests at heart. And guys, I hope you've enjoyed this. I'm going to give you a little bit of source material to check out. I do recommend that you check out the Volsunga saga itself. So it's a great, there's great translation by R.G. Finch, The Saga of the Volsungs. It's published, it's even got a translation with a facing page, old Icelandic text. You can get that. You can also get a translated version by William Morris and Elric Magnusson, which is Erik Magnusson is probably one of the more popular translations. You can also take a look at the website www.timelessmyths.com for a basic synopsis of the whole story and a little bit of a thematic breakdown. But I definitely recommend reading the Volsunga saga. And then I'd also recommend Das Nibelungenlied. And if you're feeling real spry, read J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings cycle. You know, The Hobbit all the way down to The Return of the King. It's a lot of reading, but you cross-reference the Volsunga saga, which is incredibly short with that, and you're going to find a lot of the same commonalities and themes exist within Tolkien's work, and that's because Tolkien read the saga, loved the saga, and tried to emulate it in his work. But that's the story of Sigurd Fafnir's Bane, the hero who rose to great heights by killing a dragon and then fell sharply and abruptly, getting killed in his own bed by his wife's stupid brother. Guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show, and I hope you'll take a look at that source material. I'll, of course, be back next week with another episode of the Bareback Facts. And, of course, you guys can catch me Sundays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time with Straight Football Talk. Guys, enjoy the rest of your week, and I will see you all on Sunday.